It's the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast, episode 373, and I am your host, Adam Mangum. Several episodes ago, Matt and I selected our best six teams in BYU sports history. We dive into one of those teams in this episode, talking about the 1996 football team. What moments and players made that season so special? But before that, we recap the highlights of BYU Football Media Day 2019. This is the CougarFan.com Rising Shot Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout, and you can listen to us right now. I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast, Matt, but I am recording from a new location.
Oh, that's right. I don't know that we have talked about this.
It's not the first podcast I've recorded in this town, but it is the first podcast I've recorded in this house. And if it seems a little echoey, it's an empty room. Pretty much with boxes. And it's probably echoey.
And to be clear, this is your house, right?
No, I broke into somebody else's house. That's why it's going to get weird. No, this is my new house.
They're still asleep, so I'm going to have to speak quietly.
That's right. That's right. We'll whisper. Now I'm sounding creepy like you. I relocated. Stop it. We don't need your weird whispering. We relocated to the Wichita area of Kansas. And for a job, and we moved last week, hence why we didn't have a podcast. I had to, you know, move and stuff, and then we're here surrounded by boxes mostly as we unpack ourselves. So, welcome to Wichita, listeners. Welcome to Wichita.
It's pretty good stuff.
But I've recorded a bunch of podcasts from Wichita at the Hampton Inn and Suites. The Hampton Inn and Suites.
Top shelf.
But I don't have my good. I don't have my good mic yet. We haven't found it. It's in a box somewhere. All right. So enough about me. Let's talk about me and my mistake that I made. And Jordan Comstock sent a nice email. It was very, very respectful, Jordan, of telling me I'm a moron. But no, he didn't say that. Jordan was highly respectful, pointing out that Jody Gennessy, who works for the. For the Deseret News and has worked for them for about 20 years and covering the Jazz and other things, is a man, not a woman. I said she. I knew that. I just know a lot of Jodies that happen to be women, and I don't know what happened that night. But
I think we've even talked about stuff that Jody's written on the show before.
We have, for sure. Without making that mistake. But made the mistake, own up to it. That was a mistake. I don't know Jody. I know a lot of the people that work at the Des News, and have met many of them over the years. I don't have the pleasure of having met Jody. So anyway, there's I think another article we're going to look at today that was from him as well. But Jordan rightfully pointed out that my mistake. So not that Jody's listening, but any apologies necessary. I give those. But Matt, with those two items about me, we're going to stop talking about me, at least for a little while, and talk about Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, Media Day came and went, and... Wah, wah. Right? I mean, nothing really big, right? Or were
the
the
polos are still terrible.
The what?
The polo shirts are still awful.
Oh, the polo shirts are still bad.
When are they going to get that right? All they need is a solid color polo with the stretch Y, like, on the front. Like, that. It's not hard, guys.
It should be.
It's not hard. We don't need any weird piping. We don't need any weird shading of colors. And that's all we need.
You don't need the sleeves being different, like somebody stitched them on separately?
Yeah, let's just put on some normal shirts. Can we just put on some normal shirts?
All right. So, couple of headlines. Let's talk about these headlines, okay? Wilson, Bushman, Anderson, according to the players and the staff, are on track to play against Utah. Matt, do you believe it, and how does that make you feel?
I definitely believe it with Wilson because we've seen plenty of clips of him throwing footballs. I've seen a clip of him throwing a pass to MLP. Throwing a pass to his dad in the backyard and yep. A bunch of his like rehab work. So I feel confident that Wilson's going to be ready.
And his mom has made it clear.
I don't know that I have.
on Twitter.
And she, obviously, she is the source of all things that are good, right?
By the way.
Her whole stance on the colors and all this stuff, I love it.
Her Twitter game is next level for a parent, so.
I've not seen any visual evidence for Bushman or Anderson, though, so I'm not quite as confident.
I don't, until they play in the fall, like you said, we've seen some Wilson do some things, so that gives you, to your point, a higher level of confidence. Until we see Bushman and Anderson do things, I mean, I don't know, right? I'm not a doctor, I'm not on the staff, but I'll take their word for it. The thing that a lot of people thought was going to be announced but was not was a new ESPN contract, but it was not announced. So, Matt, is that a big deal or no deal?
I don't think it's a big deal. It sounds to me like they're still trying to work out what the bowl affiliations are going to look like. And I don't know like where the two sides stand on that, but I think the rest, it sounds like that's really the remaining sticking point. And so if you look at some of the language and some of the things people were saying leading into media day, I think people around the program probably thought that contract was going to be wrapped up by this week, but they still had a couple other details to iron out. And there's no rush, right? I mean, trying to have something ready for media day would be great, but that's a pretty artificial deadline. So I don't think there's anything to be freaked out about here at all.
So I asked a Twitter question on our account yesterday of how worried are people about the ESPN contract negotiations. Three options were extremely, a little, and not at all. 75% not at all, 17% a little, 8% extremely. So I would say the Twitterverse, or at least the 52 people on Twitter that responded to this poll, would agree with you. And I agree with you as well. I don't think
You and I have both negotiated things, right? Plenty of people out there have negotiated things. Artificial deadlines do you no good. Real deadlines create movement, right? So,
yeah.
Until there's some type of real deadline out there, there is no rush.
Yeah, I mean, I negotiate bedtimes almost every night, right?
Yeah.
I mean, as Gaffigan said, it's like terrorist negotiations, like somebody has hostages. Anyway. Let's talk about Cougar Canyon. In some ways, if I lived in Utah and went to more home games, this might be the biggest announcement, and it may be for some folks. It's not for me because I've only been to one home game in the last decade, maybe longer than that, in California last year, which was... But what do you think about Cougar Canyon? What do you think about like a big tailgating / party area there behind Lavelle Edwards Stadium?
I think it's awesome. And to be honest, you and I have talked about this a lot. We try and go to a game or two a year. And typically the past several years, we've picked, a cool destination or a cool opponent. But if this Cougar Canyon thing really gets off the ground, that could be a draw for me to go see one of these big opponents in Provo.
Well,
just to check that out.
I feel like we need to eventually, right? We've picked cool opponents in cool NFL stadiums and stuff, right? We did UMass and Gillette. We did... Missouri in Kansas City. What else did we do? I feel like I'm missing one.
We did West Virginia at FedEx.
Yes, that's one I'm missing. And then we did Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So, and we did Wisconsin in Madison. You flew up for that, right?
Right.
Not this last year, but the time before that. So, anyway, yeah, I'm with you. And it was kind of fun last year to go and kind of relive what it's like to go to a game in Provo. Because it is a lot of fun. I mean, number one, because we went there and there's nostalgia, but also it's a good crowd and, there's some cool traditions that both things that from when we were there, but also new stuff, like eating a cougar tail, which I'm too much
of a wuss.
Who
doesn't like a giant maple bar?
I can't eat a whole one. I probably could if I prepped properly. I would just need to prep.
I'd have to prep like for days. I'd have to get ready for that kind of a sugar intake at once.
All right, our first tweet bag question of the day, Matt.
Oh, tweet bag.
What is going on over there? From Gary Payne on Twitter, if you want to tweet us, tweet at us. That's at BYU underscore Rice Shout. This was from Gary Payne at FastBreakGP. He says, any surprises on the Media Day release depth chart? Hashtag TweetBag, hashtag PainBag. Matt, I would say no. I don't think there were any surprises. Yeah, some people were saying about the running backs, but there's a note at the top of the depth chart that says, does not include players who will join the team for the first time in fall camp. So the grad transfer running backs wouldn't be on here.
Right.
So on the offensive side, I don't know. I mean, I guess or on all the running backs, Katoa, Fanua, and Algier had all or. I would think that Katoa's the clear starter. But I don't know. No, there wasn't anything super.
Yeah, but I think they're leaving room there for competition with the two grad transfers coming in.
Oh,
That's what that's all
for
about.
For sure. For sure.
You know, and one thing on the defense, with Troy Warner listed as a number two, is interesting. But like when you look at, you look at the rest of the depth chart and you think, well, where else would you put him, right?
Well, and so, we already talked about, we thought that's where he might end up earlier. So
right.
That we couldn't put that as a surprise because obviously Austin Lee has been good. I do think it's interesting that Skylar Southam and Jake Oldroyd, but not a surprise, are both listed at place kicker with the or. So again, and then Jaron Hall is the holder for kicks. That could lead to some interesting things on field goals and
extra points.
Yeah, that's
pretty cool.
Nothing against Fowler. But he wasn't much of a threat to do anything else. And on defense, I don't have any surprises on there. So, sorry,
no,
Gary.
No
big surprises. Other unrelated non-media day news. We had this was Jody's article that I think I mentioned previously that we'd be mentioning him again. There were 2 3-star recruits that committed to BYU over the weekend. Sol J. Maiava. I'm sure I messed up that terribly, who's a quarterback originally from Hawaii who is been playing, prepping in the Washington, D.C. area, as well as 3-star receiver Devin Downing from American Fork. I would say that the quarterback signing is probably the most more noteworthy because it seems like these 3-star quarterbacks, we're starting to get a bunch of them.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting one, right? I mean, it's you look at I guess Hodge was kind of an interesting one too, right? But somebody like Wilson, who's a kind of a more of a local guy, that one isn't as much of a shock. But some of the, when you get these guys from, I feel like they're much further out of the backyard. It's pretty cool.
Well, he's recruited. He was recruited by. Sol J was recruited by Utah State, Michigan, Oregon, Virginia, Purdue, Hawaii, Fresno State. I think he had offers from all the schools, according to Jody's article that I just mentioned. So you beat out Utah, you beat out several fairly notable P5 schools, Oregon and Michigan, right? Now, I don't know if they were looking at him as a quarterback or a pure athlete where he might have gotten flipped somewhere else, right? I don't know enough to say that, so the decision may be based on, BYU saying, yeah, you can stay as a quarterback here. I do think as you look at the quarterbacks they're recruiting, though, they are athletes, meaning they're not just drop-back passers. And I think it's very clear that they're going to want mobile quarterbacks going forward.
Yeah, that seems to be what they're after.
All right. Last bit of news, not Media Day related as well, is BYU and Boise State announced that they will do a basketball series, a home and home next season and the season after that. So the budding BYU-Boise State rivalry now expands, Matt, into basketball.
Is that going to be interesting?
Sure. I don't know. Why not?
Never really thought about Boise basketball. I would have been super excited when I first saw this announcement. I thought when I first started reading the headline, I was like, "Oh, here we go! Like we've signed up some more games with Boise State. That's good."
Our contract with them goes to like 2055.
Goes to like forever. Yeah, but sure.
add a
perpetuity,
few more.
Perpetuity, baby.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I feel like it already is perpetuity. Matt, back to Media Day.
Why is it here? I don't know.
You know, there was nothing in Media Day that I interpreted as what we're going to do about independence and what's next or whatever else. Homo, he talked about it a lot last year, if memory's serving me right, or maybe that was 2 years ago, but not much this year. Does it surprise you that that was not like a big part of what they talked about?
Yeah, it's because they don't know what they don't have a plan.
Yeah.
Like, the plan right now is just stay independent.
Is wait.
Like, and there's not, yeah, because there's nothing they can do. You can't control hardly really any of this.
Yeah.
Like, even winning games doesn't guarantee you anything. So I think that, you know, so when you get in a situation like Media Day, it's a tough choice to make, right? Do we talk a lot about this, or do we just drive on and talk about the things that we can't control and the things that we are doing? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting bit. I think at this point, I'm guessing that most of the administration is tired of the discussion, because until something changes, there's no reason to change. And I think that frustrates a lot of fans.
Yeah, but, I mean, there's nothing to talk about, right? I mean, fans want to keep talking about it, but the administration understands that there's really not much more to say.
And former players want to keep talking about it, right? They want to
some of them want to make sure they get their whole dollar's worth.
Right, right. So, anyway, well, Matt, that's enough of that. Let's talk about our popcorn popping segment for today. So we're going to talk about one of our
You waited because you thought I was going to jump.
I thought you were going to do more because you've always done more. I felt like you had established a pattern, but you're going to break that pattern apparently. Good
meta.
For you.
That's right, I went meta on you. Like I'm in your head.
You didn't go meta. I don't think you even know what that means. I think you just said that word because it's a buzzword. Your face doesn't know what it means. So popcorn popping this week is the 1996 football team. That's going to be our topic.
Greatest
for
football
today.
Team ever assembled.
Okay, let's save the hyperboles for later in the show. But before we get there, we had an email from listener Preston Arnold, and I believe he said he's a recent, if I remember right, a recent listener who came across the podcast in just the last few weeks. Preston, welcome to the podcast. He emailed us. You can do that too at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Why do I have trouble with the email address? You know what we need? We need all of our handle and our email address to be the same. That's my problem.
You've had this problem for a couple of weeks now.
I think it's been longer than a couple of weeks, but whatever. Preston, we're not going to read your email. But basically the premise of his email is we missed one of the top six teams of all time, and one of his choices would be the 2018 women's volleyball team. And his argument comes down to this: they were the only team to beat the otherwise undefeated eventual national champions in Stanford. And, they're probably one injury away from potentially winning the title. Now, Matt, what are your feelings on the 2018 women's volleyball team?
A historically good team, right? One of the, especially if you look inside the women's volleyball program, but also a historically good team at BYU. This was a really fun season. We watched a lot of these games. We watched a lot of these matches. And we discussed it on the show as well, right? It was a really fun run to watch, especially we got into the tournament play. I mean, I watched those with my kids. Really, really good team. Players from that team doing things that other players we haven't had do before, go on playing with the national team and other things before they've graduated. And there's a lot of cool things to talk about with that team. So clearly, definitely should have been in the discussion as we walked through teams. I don't know if it changes the outcome for me, But yeah, absolutely should have been in the discussion.
Yeah, it doesn't change the outcome for me. I think in the end, I mean, he makes some really good points about this is like men's basketball and women's basketball. There's a bunch of teams, right, in Division One. I think it's 200-something that are in women's volleyball, and there's a 60, you know, a big postseason tournament. Men's volleyball does not have that volume, right? And football doesn't either, but I think it's disingenuous to argue that football isn't highly competitive, right? But there is no playoff, but again, football, it's where, you know, apples and oranges here. You can't play football games 2 days in a row like they do in volleyball. Heck, in volleyball, sometimes they do. I've seen, I don't know that they do this anymore, but they used to do two matches, even in college, in a day, right? So, you know, you look at that. But he makes some good points. Six All-Americans, a bunch of players like the 1999 men's volleyball team who went on to play for the U.S. national team, and at different levels, and again, very recent, not that long ago. I say they're very worthy. We should have talked about them, but no, we are not going to put them in the top six. We spent a lot of time that year talking about them on the show.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Fun team to watch. So, Matt, we're going to start out with the 1996 football team, talking about maybe the most important question about that team that we're going to answer today.
One of the best questions I think we've ever had. I love this question.
Maybe ever. And that comes from Keith Smith on Facebook. And if you want to join our conversation on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/riseandshout. Keith asks, what music were the 96 players listening to on game day to get pumped? Matt, you and I are going to each play three songs that we believe they were listening to in the locker room in 1996. So why don't you go first, because I am very magnanimous.
Well, and you know that I'm dying to play this song. It's taken everything that I could not to start playing it at random points in the show up until now.
Correct.
But I will say this. This is a song that was absolutely played in the locker room in 1996, was played in football locker rooms for a decade before that, and has been played in football locker rooms ever since. This is the football locker room anthem. Who has ever played football and not listened to Welcome to the Jungle in the locker room? I challenge you to find me somebody. I challenge you, except for our brother Don, who was playing football before the song came out.
The problem with Don is his favorite version of that song is actually in Klingon. I don't know if you knew that. There's a Klingon version of that song.
The Guns N' Roses was covering the Klingon version.
Yeah, exactly. So he did listen to it in high school. It was. It's a little known fact that it was first a Klingon song. I would say that my question
sorry.
Is
people, sorry, I can't turn it off.
Yeah, you can turn it off. There's a pause button. My question is for the folks that are listening to the show at 1.5 or 2x, that's got to sound super fast, right? That opening riff to Welcome to the Jungle. So anyway, all right, now my first selection. And this one was no doubt being played. The non-explicit version was being played in the BYU locker room in 1996. So do you think they were listening to that in the locker room before games, or is that more of a practice or after-game song?
I think it's all three. I think that song was probably all three. I remember that year that song being played in a variety of scenarios. Because you got to understand, right? Like, not all of the songs are Welcome to the Jungle, right? you come in the locker room, you're getting your stuff put together. I mean, that's a pretty good song for that situation, I think.
Yeah. All right. Your second choice, sir.
My second choice would be used similarly. Also, didn't necessarily come out in 1996, but I think owns the same place in the locker room playlist as the song that you just played for us.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize there's nothing left, cause I've been blasted.
See, that song was played on repeat, I'm sure, right? That's when they were using compact discs, if you recall, right? So I'm sure that song was played. That song was definitely played.
All right, here's also not a song that came out in right around that time. It's a little older, but is a classic locker room pregame pump-up song. Are you ready? What do you think, Matt? You think that was played in the locker room in 1996?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's still on my workout playlist right now by Van Halen.
Oh, it's
great,
fantastic.
Song.
Great song. All right, Matt, your third and maybe most important choice.
Is this the special choice?
This is the special choice. Unless you have a non-special choice.
I've got one more non-special one.
You can't follow rules.
Was played.
All right,
listen, you can't ask me to list songs that were played in a football locker room during the era at which I was playing football and not expect me to have several songs to talk about.
Oh, my gosh. I played high school football. I was blah, blah, blah.
At a tiny high school in whatever, okay? I understand it wasn't a big deal, but we were all listening to the same music, guys.
All right,
including this little gym.
Up to Never Never Land.
If this song doesn't give you chills listening to it, there's something wrong with you. You need to go to a doctor.
I have my next choice, and I'm actually following the rules that we set up. For sure played in the locker room. Are you ready? It was a
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Big hit in the mid-90s. Here we go. What do you think, Matt? Were you listening to this in high school?
I'm doing the dance right now.
You're doing the dance. Okay. They were not listening to that song. We were supposed to, for our third pick, do joke songs.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
What about this one? What about Seal, Don't Cry? You think that made the playlist?
Absolutely it did. 100%. All right. So we've wasted enough time on this. All right.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, let's talk about the football team. So Matt, let's talk about – I want to talk about with the 1996 football team, the expectations. So let's go back to fall camp 1996. And you're coming off a year in 1995 in which was a good year, 7-4 year, Sarkisian's first year as the starter. He had a good year, 20 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, almost 3,500 yards. You look at that, but it wasn't a great season. I mean, lost two WAC games, was probably like a top 50 team. Quite frankly, it feels a lot like a lot of the seasons we've had lately, that 1995 team.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to that year. The expectations were not a special season for them. This is not 1984 BYU football team where they thought, well, new quarterback, Steve Young's gone, but they still could be really, really good if Bosco's good. This was not like that. This was, we hope they're better than mediocre the next year. That was the hope for the 1996 football team.
Oh yeah, I think that if we had sat down, so if we had been podcasting in 1996 and we had sat down and run through the schedule, there's probably three or four losses on here that we would pick.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Right? If we had done that, I think we would have seen. I mean, the obvious one is A&M, right? To start the season.
Yeah, nobody expected that.
Right, but even go to if Wyoming, right? Go to TCU maybe. A couple of these games we would have probably predicted as losses, and Washington obviously I think would have also been on that list, and unfortunately that was also a game that we lost. But anyway, there was not a lot of expectations, which is part of the reason why.
Would we have predicted them to win the conference or to even play in that championship game? I mean,
I think you would have predicted maybe. They had a chance, but they certainly were not, based on what happened in 1995. They certainly were not a clear cut winner. The other part is, I think the jury was out on whether Sarkisian was more than just a slightly above average quarterback, because that's how he played. He played absolutely. As an above-average quarterback in 1995. He was not elite as he was in 1996. I think there were big question marks. Now, granted, some of the big stars from 1996, especially on the offensive side of the ball, didn't play on that 1995 team. I'm thinking, you know, of the two running backs, right? Well, did McKenzie play on the 95 team? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. But Jenkins did not.
Jenkins was new. Right.
So you had some contributors that were different than what had been there before. And, I look at that and I think, okay, there was a chance here. There were reasons to be optimistic, I guess, but not reasons to believe there was a special season coming. That's probably the best way I can put it. So, Matt, let's talk about the moments that mattered in this season. And I think there are three big moments that matter. And you tell me if I'm wrong on these moments, okay? I think the first moment that matters is just the Texas A&M game.
Oh, yeah.
That is the game that transformed them from, okay, maybe they could be better than mediocre and win the conference. That'd be great. To, holy crap, they could be good. They could be, this could be something special. And BYU's had seasons, wins like that before that didn't turn out to be special years, even though the win was big. For example, Wisconsin last year, right? Where you have a big win, but it doesn't necessarily lead to a big season. But those kind of wins always get you pumped for the potential of winning that game, of having a special season. What was your reaction when they beat Texas A&M?
So I was at that game.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this. This was the first BYU football game that I attended in person. And it was an unreal environment. And you look at the way that game shook out, and it's still one of the top, for me, top sporting events I've ever attended in my life. Just with the excitement, the back and forth, the pulling it out, a couple of huge plays there at the end, you know, diving catches, I'm just crazy stuff. I mean, I don't even know how. I mean, this is what cemented me as a fan at a formative time in my life.
Yeah, yeah, and you look at, you know, two fourth quarter touchdown passes by Sarkisian to at one point tie the game, then, you know, A&M kicks a 50-plus yard field goal, right, to take the lead, and then Sarkisian goes down again and throws a touchdown pass to KO to win it. And you look at Sarkisian's numbers in that game, 33 of 44, 536 yards. We could not run the ball that day, less than 2 yards per carry on the ground that day. 6 touchdown passes. He was sacked a couple times, which would be a recurring theme in the games where we struggled. And part of that is Sarkisian's mobility, and part of that was the offensive line sometimes struggled against very good defensive lines. But Matt, it's an amazing game. This is during my black hole, right? I was on my mission, so I did not see this game, but I have watched it several times because we had it on tape, if I'm remembering correct. Didn't we have a VHS of this game?
Yeah, and I wore it out.
Yeah. It was Sarkisian. This was a game in which people all of a sudden said, whoa, wait a second. Is he elite? Is he big? So this is definitely a moment that mattered. Matt, the next moment.
Absolutely. Like the Kaipo Maguire pass, the 51-yard pass in the third quarter for the touch, the pass to Kaipo.
Yeah.
Right? Just the back and forth there. I mean, 536 passing yards, right? It's like, oh, man, who is this guy? Like, this was a big moment.
And
big
the
deal.
Defense gave up a ton of yards in that game, but made some plays in the second half that were important. But really, this is a game about the offense, right? This is a game about the offense. And McKenzie, by the way, was not on that 95 team, where he didn't play a meaningful role, I guess is the better way to put it. So, you know, and then we saw 96 McKenzie have an excellent year, almost 6 yards a carry. Going back to moments that matter, though, Matt, another moment that matters is the negative one, which is the loss to Washington. So let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
What happens in that loss? What's the difference? And we got a question from Randy Whittle. He says, what do you think was the single biggest factor in the lone loss to Washington during the 96 season? Sacks, QB pressure, lack of a running game, crowd intimidation. Matt, if you had to pick, not just necessarily Randy's three, but what do you think is the biggest factor in that game? BYU's 2-0, pounded Arkansas State, beat Texas A&M, going to head into the WAC, and is playing against a Washington team that we should be able to beat that season. What's the biggest factor from your side?
So the weather was a big deal in this game. The field was very wet. There's puddles, you know, there were puddles out there on the grass, which I believe was an artificial surface, right?
Yeah.
So I think that was a big deal. The inability to rush the football, to run the football, I think was the biggest problem. You know, it gave Washington's defense, which was no slouch, the opportunity to do some things defensively that made it difficult for us to score points.
Yeah.
You know, because you're looking at a game where, you know, 27 rushing attempts for 14 yards.
That's,
you know, 51 yards lost rushing, which is, you know, which defensively that, you know, that talks to a pass rush. And it's so just the inability to win the game offensively at the line of scrimmage, which is crazy because that offensive line was amazing. You know, they spent a couple guys into the pros. They average weight. I don't have this in front of me, but the average weight of these guys was, you know, well into 3 bills, and they were all athletic. They were fast guys.
Yeah.
That could, you know, later in the season, they were pulling to block for runs outside. I mean, they're very big and athletic, strong guys. But this just was not the day. I've always wondered if this game had been played later in the season, if it comes out differently, because I don't think the team knew at this point, right? You come off of the win with Texas A&M, which was a surprise for everybody, but I'm not sure this team had really understood what their potential was going into this game. And so I've always wondered, if you play this game 3, 4, 5 weeks later, do they walk in there with an entirely different attitude and end up coming out of here with a win?
Yeah. I think, you know, you mentioned the rushing, so Sarkisian was sacked, I don't know how many times in this game. Eight times in the game, all right? So if you take our Sarkisian's numbers from the sacks, they rushed only 14 times. And for 58 yards. That's still not good, right? Atwai had a couple of decent runs, and besides that, there was nothing. You know, Brian McKenzie had a run of 8 yards, right? you know, this was...
And this is before Ronnie Jenkins had really come on. You know, like, oh, yeah. Ronnie Jenkins in the Washington game wasn't the Ronnie Jenkins you saw in the Utah game later that year.
No, no, for sure he is not. But I'm going to point to something else. I'm going to point to our inability to stop the Washington rushing attack. Shahee, their running back, their top running back at the time, over 6 yards of carry, including a long of 45. Corey Dillon, who people might remember, ended up playing for several years in the pros, 10 carries for 82 yards and a 33-yarder. And they had another running back with a 20-plus yard run. We gave up a bunch of big plays to the running game. In the passing game, a little bit, but we gave up, I think, 4 runs longer than 20 yards. And that's, I don't know if one of these is more important than the other, but I will tell you, this was not, there was not the best, the defense was not elite that year anyway. They were very good, but this was not a great moment for them, defensively. And if you look at, you know, Martin and Mirbrook had some tackles, but we also didn't create any big plays I should say we didn't create enough big plays on defense to make up for some of the things that didn't go right on offense.
Yeah.
But we only averaged 4 yards, a little less than 5 yards per play, which I think is the worst game we had offensively all year that particular year. So, obviously, the other moment that mattered, and you could talk about a bunch of things in here, right? That there's the New Mexico game the next week that was nearly a disaster, right?
Yeah.
17-14 win at home to a team that would end up being 6-5, not the worst team in the world, but not a very good team. We could talk about the WAC championship game with Wyoming, which is interesting. Again, a fascinating game as well. Do you want to talk about that game at all before we go into the bowl game?
Well, no, the one game I would point out that I think is interesting is the Utah game.
Okay, tell me more.
Yeah, we came out there. You look at a team, you know, we just talked about how this unexpected rushing game earlier in passing stuff earlier in the season, right, with the 500-plus yards against A&M. And you look at the Washington game, you know, that game was all passing for some different reasons. But you get into the Utah game, and everybody's expecting BYU to roll in there into Salt Lake and try to throw the football all over the field. And Utah set up their defense completely about stopping the pass. And then we came in there and gave them the 1-2 punch of McKenzie Jenkins, rushed for 366 yards on 63 attempts, right?
Yeah.
And we were able to protect the quarterback, right? So, you know, you're talking about, you know, he only went, Sarkisian went 7-12, right? He only threw 12 passes. And that turned out to be the big difference in that game. And that, for me, is part of what made that game so fun to watch, is it was a different team offensively than we had seen the rest of the season. And for me, when I look at what they were able to do there, that speaks to the completeness of this 1996 team, right? They were able to win games by dominating in the air, and were also able to win games dominating on the ground. And that's something that's pretty rare for not just BYU, but just for anybody.
So if you remember back in the day, the knock on Norm Chow was he was predictable and never changed his game plan. This is another piece of evidence that just shows that when Norm Chow is at his best as the offensive coordinator, now he was doing it with Roger French. So, you know, both of them got the same criticism. So in the end, it doesn't really matter who was calling and scripting every play that day. This is just shows that they were not, right? They came in and did something completely different against their rival on the road and end up, you know, creating a very memorable game because of it and big statistical days. And this was a decent Utah team. They weren't great, but they were that Ron McBride decent team, right, of the 90s, not what they would become, you know, 10 years later. Well, let's talk about the bowl game, Matt. Is this the, outside of maybe the Michigan game. Is this the biggest bowl game in BYU history? I mean, it's the Cotton Bowl. It's got to be
New Year's Day.
New Year's Day. It's either the biggest or second, right?
Yeah, maybe second. I don't know if I can say it's the biggest, but yeah, I think you have a strong case for second biggest.
Yeah. So what matters in this game? What are the plays that made the difference, or the performances that made the difference in that game?
The performance you have to talk about, you cannot avoid talking about when you talk about this game, is the play of Shea Mearbrook, right? So Cotton Bowl record number of sacks, or would he have 6 sacks, 11 solo tackles? He put the first points on the board at the beginning of that game by tackling Brian Kavanaugh in the end zone for a safety, right? You remember at the end of the first quarter, the score of this game was 5-0, right? What are we playing, hockey?
Right.
And but Shea Mearbrook had a monster of a day, right? And this is a guy who was a little bit undersized, one of my favorite BYU football players of all time. I think I've said it like 100 times on this show.
You have. You have said it 100 times.
But you cannot get away from this game without talking about his performance, including his sack at the end of the game that basically shut down their last hope. Right, yeah. Their last shot at driving the football. Well, no. I guess he put the pressure on that threw the pick. So, but it Muirbrook's performance here is the difference, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think here's the thing: they were an elite defensive team that year, Kansas State. They were a middling offensive team. For BYU to win this game, the defense had to do something special to keep them in the game. And to your point, Mearbrook, and not just Mearbrook, there were a few other players that also contributed defensively in this game. But Mearbrook, I mean, like you said, you can't deny that he had a big thing. Obviously, Bloomfield had 11 tackles and 2 sacks himself. And obviously, there's
right, and he'd come off of a big couple of weeks too coming into that game between Utah and Wyoming.
And then of course there was the interception, right? That was kind of a big deal there at the end, and another one earlier in the game. So you look at those things, the defense, I mean, this is not a banner game for the offense. Sarkisian didn't have a terrible game. He actually had a pretty good one, but he was sacked 7 times for heaven's sakes. And the rushing game was not able to. I think the leading rusher in that game wasn't it the fullback? Wasn't it Johnson?
Oh, might have been. Let me scroll up here and see. Yeah, he is.
He was the. I mean, you know, McKenzie, Jenkins, whoever they gave the ball to in that game, could not do anything, and it was more trickery that got him some yards in the passing game. So you look at this, and it's a fascinating game, and of course, the interception at the end to seal it is a big deal. So, Matt, anything else you want to talk about on this game?
No, but I could talk about this season forever. I may have to go watch this game again this weekend. I probably there are a couple games from this season that I probably watch once a year. The Utah game and this game are on that list, and then the Texas A&M game, maybe not annually, but frequently.
What's really cool is if we've got young listeners who weren't around or weren't, aren't old enough to have participated in this season, or people like me that were on their missions or otherwise out of it during that time frame, you can go back and watch these games. It's pretty awesome, right? You can go find them.
A couple of these you can pick up right off of the BYU TV app.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, right? This is not when you and I were growing up and we just had to kind of, live vicariously about the Miracle Bowl in the '84 season. Now the Miracle Bowl they show it almost every year. I think you can get that one through the BYU app too, but they show it almost every year.
I think so.
On ESPN, sometime at night on when they show classic bowl games. So anyway, that game was amazing. Let's talk about the players that mattered for this team as a season. Now, you mentioned Mearbrook, and we've mentioned Sarkisian, but let's start with Mearbrook here for a second. He had a good year Don't get me wrong. But he made the season in that game, right? I think, what did he finish with, like 9 sacks, and 6 of them were in that game? Am I getting my stats right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So you look at that and you say, okay, Mirbrook had an amazing season and had a very, very good season and one amazing game. But you look at, there were a lot of good defensive players that year who, besides Mirbrook, who led the team in tackles, Chris Ellison, Brad Martin, I mean, solid linebacking core and some good defensive backs. I said before that they weren't an elite team statistically, but they were a good defensive team. Anybody else on the defense that you'd bring up besides Mirbrook?
We already talked about Bloomfield.
Yeah, had a great second half year.
Tim McTyre had a great season. Tim McTyre and Omar Morgan. You know, several guys on this list bounced around or were on practice squads.
Yeah.
In the NFL, right? I mean, Mirbrook went to the Raiders.
He had 3 interceptions, as well as leading the team in tackles and sacks.
Yeah. Ed Keel was pretty solid that Keel season. Was solid. I mean, he didn't have, Byron Frisch, I think, it bounced around in the league maybe for a year. There was some real talent.
Yeah.
There's some real talent on that defense.
Yeah, they had a good year. But obviously, some of the players we're going to talk about, Sarkisian is the key to this year. Throws for over 4,000 yards, 10 yards per pass attempt, 33 touchdowns to just 12 interceptions. One of the best seasons by a quarterback in BYU history. I think there it's not understating it to say Mirbrook made the year with that special performance in Kansas in the bowl game in the Cotton Bowl against Kansas State. But without Steve Sarkisian's elite play up until that point, there's no Cotton Bowl and there's no Shea Mirbrook Day for the Ages.
No, there's not. There's no 1996 season without Sarkisian's play here.
I mean, heck, just go to the aforementioned Texas A&M game. And then the 1-2 punch of McKenzie and Jenkins. BYU, only in a couple seasons, has had 2 running backs play at an elite level. Both of them average almost 6 yards per game. And that doesn't even mention that they had Johnson, Atuai, and a few other guys that could run the football as well. And then you had Atua Mealy, Chad Johnson, KO, Kaipo McGuire.
Chad Lewis.
What did I say?
You said Chad Johnson. But that's
Chad
fine.
Johnson. Ocho Cinco was on the team. It's a little known fact. But Chad Lewis was on the team. You look at that, he had great options to throw to. So you can't give all the credit to Sarkisian. And you mentioned the offensive line was very good.
Oh, that offensive line was really good. I mean, they put a couple guys in the league that hung around for a while. But you mentioned Atula Mealy, right? I think Atula Mealy sometimes gets lost because Chad Lewis went on to have such a great professional career, and Atula Mealy gets hurt in the Wyoming game, has season-ending surgery, doesn't get to play in the bowl game, and really struggles, right? Ends up still getting picked up by the Seahawks. But never really fully recovers from the, I think he tore 2, I think he did he was MCL and ACL. But, he was probably the better tight end on that team. You know, he had 692 receiving yards off of 46 receptions. I wonder, the inability to, you look at what, and I understand Kansas State had an elite defense, right? But I think you really see how the offense missed Atula Mealy in the bowl game.
Well,
I mean he was a big deal.
You look at the modern NFL. You look at what the Patriots did in trying to get good tight ends on the other side of Gronkowski and stuff like this. I mean, this a 2 tight end offense where both can block and both can receive creates massive matchup problems. The problem is it's rare to get even one of those guys on your roster, like a Chad Lewis, like an Atula Mealy. Now, Lewis may not have been elite as a blocker at that stage, but But he was good enough, and Mealy was both a good blocker and an excellent receiver. And you look at that and you say, you know, looking forward to this season, if you can get Bushman and MLP both healthy, they could be the next version of that tandem, right? And that tandem, I'm with you. Peely was the better player that season, statistically, and obviously Sarkisian leaned on him more than he leaned on Chad Lewis.
I mean, if Atula Mealy stays healthy, we probably produce two all-pro tight ends off of that team.
Yeah, yeah. They were both very, very good that year, and both very good in their college careers. And they pretty much overlapped the whole time, right? I think they were on all the same teams.
Pretty close.
So pretty amazing when you think about it. Matt, any other thoughts about this season? I mean, you think it's the best BYU team ever. I don't think it's the best one ever, but it's on the short list, and it was certainly, from a season perspective, if you just look at the body of work of a season, it's the second best. I mean, they only lost one game next to 1984. It's hard to argue that it's not the second best season, even if you don't believe that they would have beaten head-to-head, say, the 19, you know, pick one of those early 80s teams.
Yeah, see, I will argue this probably for the rest of my life, that I think that head-to-head, this team beats any other team we fielded in a season just because of their ability to both run and throw the ball effectively and the defense. You look at a lot of these teams that, you know, you could pit these guys up against in the 80s. I know you, people will argue with me on this, and people have argued with me on this, but this defense was special. And I think some of those other defenses would struggle more to shut down this offense than this defense would to shut down those early 1980s offenses. Shut down might be a little bit strong, but slow down maybe, right?
Yeah. I think you're. I just think you're full of garbage.
This team head to head beats anybody.
Yeah. I think you're full of garbage.
This team
on the
beats
defense
anybody head to head.
Unlike your thing of there's a couple of guys on those 1996 team on the defense that stuck around for a year or two on practice squads. The 1980s had guys that went into the NFL and had careers, right? Holmo, you know, Leon White. You know, there was a bunch. Right, so I hear what you're saying, but there were some really good defenses of those early '80s teams that gets overshadowed by the shiny offenses that we had at the time. But I think this team, 1996, could play with any team BYU's ever had, right? And if you had some fictional tournament in which they played each other, and you ran that simulation 100 times. This 96 team, say you seed the best, I don't know, 16 teams that BYU's ever had, this 96 team wins that tournament multiple times in your simulations because they were that good. They had the good defense, as you said. They were a balanced offense, and they had a quarterback that played well at the end of games and proved in multiple games that he could lead game-winning drives when it mattered, and that, you know, some of the other teams that would be in that top 16 may not have had a quarterback that could do that as well as Sarkisian did, and he's not the best quarterback BYU's ever had, but he's probably the best that gets talked about the least, if that makes sense, you know, because obviously the guys from the 80s and Ty Detmer with his Heisman Trophy just have a little bit more of a cachet. Now, he only played 2 years as well, though a lot of the ones from the 80s only played 2 years too, right? Bosco, Steve Young. And then McMahon played more than that, but stretched it over multiple seasons. Where do you think Sarkisian fits on the Mount Rushmore of BYU quarterbacks?
Oh, see, that's tough. I do think he's underrated.
All right, let's play a game. Let's play a game. Do you have him above or below Robbie Bosco?
Oh, geez. Now you're going to actually make me think about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say above.
Okay. I'm going to say above as well. Above or below John Beck?
Above.
Above or below Max Hall?
See, this is he and John Beck. Those are both real close.
Yeah. I'm going to say above. I say above, okay. Max Hall. Above or below Mark right, sure. Wilson?
I'm going to say above.
I think you need to go back and look at some of Wilson's stats, but this one would be close. I think they're highly comparable. Above or below Robbie Bosco? You said above. We already did that one. Above or below Steve Young?
I think he's below Steve Young. I think
below Steve Young, but not as much as you think. Sarkisian gets credit for one decent season and one elite season. Steve Young had one pretty mediocre season and then one beyond elite, like one of the best seasons in college football history for a quarterback at the time, and maybe even still when you think about context. But I'm going to say...
Yeah, he was Heisman Trophy finalist. I mean, Heisman Trophy finalist. That was a big deal.
It was a big deal, and he was something else that season. But Sarkisian was better in his junior season than Young was. What about the, Jim McMahon? You got to take
He's below Jim McMahon.
What about Ty Detmer? Below Ty Detmer.
I think you got to take Detmer.
Yeah, Detmer's got a lot of things on him. He had two seasons where he was probably the best player in college football and won the Heisman in one of those. I don't think Sarkisian was the best player in college football that year. But he was one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I think that goes without saying. Matt, anything else on this 1996 team?
Well, McMahon set like every record in the book. I mean,
McMahon's an unfair comparison. Quite frankly, he's the best, one of the best college quarterbacks in the history of college football. I mean, that's not overstating it. That is just a fact. And he was at the time, and with all the records he set at the time, I think you have to keep him. And I know part of it's the system that Edwards and his staff created, for sure. But somebody had to execute it, and as we saw after Bosco left, it couldn't be just anybody, could it? Right? It's not just a matter of plugging in the A player. So, Matt, anything else on this one before we finish with our game for today?
No, I should just stop now.
Gary Payne.
I will mention that I was going to try and name one of my kids Shay, and that died very quickly. I think that idea died before we even got engaged.
Gary
was on the list.
Gary Payne asked this: any ideas on the origin of the name Shay? I don't know. Do you remember?
I actually used to know this, and I tried to look it up today preparing for the show, and I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, it's all right. So
I don't know.
Gary asks us, was his defensive performance in the Cotton Bowl top five all-time at BYU? If we're talking about just defense, the answer is easy, yes. The only game I remember a defensive player being more dominant, and there are probably some that I'm forgetting, I'm sure, is, unfortunately, it was a regular season game, so it doesn't have much, but was Kyle Van Noy against San Diego State. You remember that one?
Yeah, that was unreal.
Yeah, but there's been very few. The list is small. It's definitely top five. And Matt, do you occasionally run around with an 80s, 90s linebacker neck pad still? That's what
I've not Gary worn an 80s, 90s neck pad since the 1990s.
Since last week. All right. So, Matt, our game today is what I'm going to call the stock market. Are you ready?
Yeah, I love the stock market.
You get $100 to spend on four stocks I'm going to give you, okay? You think these are stocks that will pay dividends at the end. They're high-risk stocks, but they're stocks you think will pay dividends, okay? And they're all the future of BYU football, different aspects of the future of BYU football, okay?
And there's no time limit on these things?
There's no time limit, right? Because they're stocks. Stocks go forever.
Okay. Right? So they could pay as long. I buy in and I wait for it to pay off whenever.
Correct. But like the time value of money, the sooner it would get paid off, the more valuable it is. Does that make sense?
The more valuable it is. I got you.
Yep. So here are the four stocks. First one is BYU gets into a P5 conference. The second one is BYU football gets a run of dominance. These are all BYU football related. Against Utah and Utah State, similar to how we used to dominate them way back in the day. The third one, BYU makes a New Year's Six bowl game. And the last one is BYU has a top five Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback. So think about it for a moment. You have $100 to spend on these four stocks. How do you allocate your $100?
Oh, jeez. I was told there would be no math.
No, you weren't. No one told you that.
That's just a phrase. That's just a thing people say.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's a stupid thing to say. Do math, man. Math is important. Math is good for you. Puts hair on your chest.
All right. Yeah, that's a
It's a Willow reference. You remember, you got to eat the root. Puts hair on your chest. The last thing the princess is going to need is a hairy chest. Anyway. I love that movie. Willow's fantastic. All right, Matt. Four stocks. What do you got?
Hold on. You didn't delay long enough.
Okay, should I quote?
So apparently
Willow
now
I'm
just going to stutter until we get there.
Yeah, I can quote more Willow. It's a great movie. There's lots of quotable lines. Willow, you idiot!
Good.
I mean, it's got a great name of Val Kilmer's character, Mad Mardigan. Oh, fantastic name for a character. It's great. And it has two old lady sorceresses fighting at the end. Oh, it's fantastic. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, good luck finding it because it's really hard to find. I tried to buy a DVD version of it. It doesn't exist. I mean a Blu-ray version, but I've got a DVD. It's very rare. All right, Matt, I've delayed long enough.
All right, I'm ready.
All right. Where BYU gets into a P5 conference, how much money are you spending on that stock?
I'm not buying that stock.
You're not buying that stock at all. All right. BYU gets a run of dominance. $0. A run of dominance against Utah and Utah State. How much money are you spending on that stock?
I'm putting 30 in there.
$30 on that. All right. BYU makes a New Year's Six bowl game.
I'm putting $30 there as well.
All right, 30. So you have spent 60 of your dollars. So I think I can do the math. You're putting $40 on BYU as a Heisman Trophy candidate, top five quarterback.
Yeah, I thought about going higher there.
You thought about going higher there. So you think that's the one that's most likely to happen out of those four scenarios. Interesting. All right. Here's
That can happen with one good season. We'll debate them in a minute.
Yeah. Here's where I spent my money, all right? $5 for BYU gets into a P5 conference, okay? I like that it's like a high risk, low spend. You know, I'm going to put $5 in that stock, right? BYU gets a run of dominance against Utah or Utah State. I put $10 on that one. BYU makes a New Year's Six bowl game. I put $40 on that one. So that gets me to, if I'm doing my math, to $55, which means I spent $45 on BYU has a Heisman top five Heisman Trophy finishing quarterback. I think I agree with exactly what you're about to say, which is all you need is one good year for that to happen. And that's also true for the New Year's Six game. The other two are way more complicated. Because for the Utah,
I feel like
Utah,
the New Year's Six game probably takes two good seasons.
It probably takes
but
two good seasons, yes.
Still the same.
A run of dominance against Utah and Utah State means three things. BYU has to be dominant, most likely. So they have to put together a string of really, really good seasons. Utah and Utah State probably both have to take a step back to make that realistic, right? Because if Utah is playing at the level they have been, over the last decade and a half. Utah State is playing at the level. You're not going to get a run of dominance, likely, against them. You could get something that's kind of freakish, and I don't mean Utah hasn't deserved the wins they've had against us, but they've had a couple of pretty freakish wins in that series that could have gone either way, last year being, throw up in my mouth. All you need is Zach Wilson this year to go crazy, and he's a Heisman quarterback candidate the next year, right? So that one probably takes 2 years too, right? Maybe not. With the schedule we play, it might only be 1 year. What do you think on the Heisman thing?
I think one really good year, with the way that the hype machine works around this stuff now, I think one really good year you could have a guy.
Yeah.
You
could have a guy.
You know, especially if it's somebody's junior season or something, because people really push that in the media. The New York Six game is hard to get to, but do we want to talk about this one that neither of us – I mean, I don't know why you're wasting $5 on it, but are we going to talk about this P5 conference issue?
It's not wasting $5.
Like they did at,
we're going to ignore it. It's not a likely thing to happen, so I don't know why you'd spend a lot of money on it as a stock. But I threw $5 at it because I think it's possible. I think it's possible if the Big 12 gets over themselves a little bit, that BYU could get in there. But so I think zero is too little in this little game of ours. But I understand why you put zero. I don't think it's nuts. I put five, for heaven's sake, so I can't really criticize something that's within $5 of my guess. So, anyway, what do you think of stock market? It's kind of a fun game, huh?
That is a good game.
I should have told you ahead of time so you could have done the math, but me reciting lines from
I should have thought that through a little bit harder.
So, anyway. Well, thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. This was the first of six episodes we're going to do about the future teams. What should we do next week, Matt? I don't know what should we do next week.
Let's surprise everybody.
We'll surprise you. We'll come up with it later on. But thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/riseandshout. You can, of course, email the show at riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Thanks again for downloading and listening. Like us wherever, or subscribe to us wherever good podcasts are subscribed to. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.